Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Swedes 2, Turnips 1. This is the podcast where the team from the Sun Football tell all the stories they've been saving for their autobiographies. From set twos with superstars to kickoffs with colleagues, we'll hear how the stories happen and what happens to the ones too hot to print. From gossip and tip-offs to world-exclusive interviews, we will cover it all. I'm Rashmin Chowdhury, and joining me in the studio today, we have the Sun's head of sport, Sean Custis, the football editor, Charlie Wyatt, and football writer from the Sun, Mr. Paul Jiggins. Love how you get the Mr. Paul.
Indeed.
Obviously very important. Now, on every show, we start with a quick fire round just to get things rolling. Okay, you've got to answer with the first thing that comes into your head. First up, quite a mild one, this, but I'm interested to hear, what is your least favourite football ground to report from? Sean?
Manchester United. Ooh, controversial.
It's very not controversial.
Because, it's not because of the ground, it's not because of the atmosphere, it's because of the press box. And sitting in it is like hell on earth. It's so cramped. I'm 6 foot two and a bit. Your knees are trapped. You hope to get the desk on the end so you can put one knee onto the steps. If you try to get down into your computer bag to get a pen out or anything, you can't do it. You're stuck. If you're in the middle, it's horrendous. It's a very thin table.
Intimate.
To put your laptop on. It is very, very intimate. But it was so difficult. I mean, it's a while since I reported from there because I'm not now on the football reporter all the time. But honestly, that was the one I least look forward to. You come out with a bad back, bad shoulders, sore elbows. I mean, I know it's first world problems and you're covering Manchester United, but honestly, for a place to work during the match, the worst.
Charlie.
Bramall Lane, Sheffield United, purely because it was a League Cup game against Tottenham. I could only see half the pitch. I could only see half the game, so you know all the jokes about being one-eyed and all that sort of stuff. Literally, I was relying online and a couple of colleagues further down because it was some like a commentary hut that stuck out. I'm hoping to go there again this season. I'm hoping maybe to see all the pitch.
Maybe some improvements. Paul.
Sellers Park. 3 hours from anywhere, even Croydon.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're the first person to say they don't want to go to Sellers Park.
Actually, another one is Barcelona. That's not great to report from either. No, is really difficult.
You're quite
very,
high up.
Very high up. It has half glass and half open, distorts the pitch. If you're on the second row, you can't see it properly, and you're about a mile and a half from the pitch. There's commentary booths to the side. You're quite cramped in. So ordinarily people would say, oh, it must be Shrewsbury or it must be, you know, things like that, or Barnsley or something. It's not. Sometimes the best football stadiums aren't necessarily the best places to work.
What is the best?
I'd go Tottenham at the moment, the new stadium. I think it's fantastic. Everything thought of there, fantastic. Yeah, I know it's the most modern stadium and it deserves to be.
To be honest, all the grounds in Russia, the World Cup, I thought they were all
I'd go with that.
Outstanding.
Yeah, well equipped.
Best one I ever worked in was Durban for the World Cup semi-final. The new one in Durban, absolutely, that had the lot. I've never found a place to beat that one.
Okay, so on the first podcast, we talked about following England on tour. How different is it when you're reporting on the big Premier League sides on tour?
Well, it's all different. But I mean, pre-season, you normally focus in, it's not so much, it's not a media scene, it's very similar to having an international tournament. When you come down into Champions League and Europa League and you're following a club abroad, there's much more media scene, it's much more surrounding the game as well. So everything's about the game, whether it's the preview the day before or, you know, the match itself and then the stuff you get in the mix home for the follow-up. But, you know, pre-season tours are very similar to covering international teams at tournaments, I think.
Pre-seasons are probably the most fun you'll get.
Quite relaxed, from a trip. They
are quite relaxed. There's usually, you get pretty good access to players as opposed to, I mean, when you go on a trip, it just isn't going to happen. It's just bam, bam, you're in, you're out. actually, in the olden days, we used to travel with the team a lot of the times on their flight to the game. That doesn't happen anymore. You used to do that with England or Glenn Hoddle. But so that was pretty much better. The players used to get fed up with you because you would be, they would be back to the airport and they would be waiting for you to get on the plane. And believe me, if they'd lost and you were like half an hour back after them,
you're the last person they want
to
see.
You do what you call the walk of shame. So you'd come in the plane at the top and they would be sitting there and you had to walk to the back of the plane past the players and they were not pleased to see you. My favourite trip of all time, club trip. This is gone down in legend with any of the press pack who were on this. 2007, Chelsea were on tour in California, Los Angeles, and Beckham was just about to move to LA Galaxy. He'd moved there. So we're there for two reasons, and Chelsea backroom staff challenged the journalists to a match at UCLA in California, and it was like amazing. So they gave us all the kit, the boots, and what amazing. We didn't know was that the players were going to come and watch as well, and they had wound up their backroom staff. You have got to beat a bunch of journos, most of whom weren't in the best of shape. You surely have to beat the journos. We get there. The entire Chelsea first team is lined along the touchline.
So we're talking those massive stars. That was
Terry Lampard.
Yeah,
exactly. The whole lot.
Mourinho.
Abramovich is there with his girlfriend. And Mourinho is playing in the team, and Mourinho's in goal. And Steve Clarke's in midfield, and he puts a tackle in, and this was an unbelievable blood and thunder game of football. No kidding. And the longer we stayed in it, we went 1-0 down, the longer we stayed in it, the more the players were winding up their own backroom staff to, you know, what are you doing? You can't beat this lot. What's going on? And we equalised, and it was 1-1. And Mourinho, who, as I say, was in goal, was clearly a little rattled by this. So after about 82 minutes, he went down injured, and he was carried off.
He was stretched off
to bring on this goalkeeper called Silvino Lauro, who was the goalkeeping coach of Chelsea, and who played for Porto in 82 in the, I think it was a UEFA Cup final. Because Mourinho had decided if it was a draw, it would go to penalties. So, of course, we get a draw, which is magnificent, and we think that's it. Yeah. But, oh, no, Mourinho has decreed it's going to penalties.
Yeah.
And he's got this guy who won a European trophy in goal. We've got John Cross of the Daily Mirror. But we lose the game
with
on
all
penalties,
due respect
but it's
to John.
A fantastic game. I mean, just...
Was it 90 minutes?
Yes, it was the full job. It was a full 90 minutes?
Oh,
it was full 90 minutes, full
How
game,
many, what,
everything.
5-a-side or...?
No, it was 11-a-side.
11-a-side? Oh, it was actually 11-a-side.
Proper 11-a-side game. Absolutely brilliant. But just everybody who played in that will tell you how fantastic it was, except, of course, the Chelsea backroom staff, who felt humiliated and couldn't show their face to the players.
And then how did it end?
Well, that was it. So, 1-1, we lose
penalties.
On penalties. It's,
well, you
it's
lost
fine.
On penalties, right?
Yeah, we lose on penalties, but it's okay. So, anyway, I had organised for us to go that night to the House of Blues on Sunset Boulevard to see Dolores O'Riordan, who was the Cranberries. So we go along. Brilliant. We've had a great afternoon. One with Chelsea. Now we're off to see Dolores O'Riordan.
Couldn't be better. Living the dream.
Starts off. Boom, 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 boom. Zombie.
Yeah.
Bouncing around. Zombie. Great. Three songs in. The drummer starts shaking. Falls off his stool. He's had some sort of fit. Lights go up. Dolores looks at him. Storms off the stage. Police come in. Clear everybody out, please. Ambulance, everybody clears out. Three songs in, gone. End of Dolores O'Riordan's concert. Walk up the street, walk round the corner, and literally walk into this bloke who is splayed out on a park bench halfway across Sunset Boulevard on his own.
Okay.
And we turn around, it's Mike Tyson.
No.
That is not... anybody who's on this trip will tell you, Mike Tyson is lying on a park bench, goes, "Hi, boys. How are you doing?"
You could not make this up.
All right, Mike. You and all the photographer. There was a lot of photographers with us at the time. All sort of, they got a picture with him and all like, "It is Mike Tyson." It literally was. Apparently the story was that every year, comes to Sunset Boulevard for a week, walks up and down, goes to various different bars.
And sleeps on a bench.
And sleeps on a bench. And we went back to the hotel. I woke up the next day. I thought, That is impossible to replicate. Of anything I ever do in my football life, to draw 1-1 with Chelsea's battery team in front of all the players, to then go and watch this concert, which got changed, then to come up the road and trip over Mike Tyson, you can't beat it. I'll never beat it.
That is amazing. Can either of you, Charlie or Paul, top that?
No, I'm going to Genk in a few weeks. I'm not expecting
Benfica Tottenham.
So am I. I'll see you there.
Benfica Tottenham, Europa League.
Okay.
So, arrived at the hotel, which was a UEFA hotel, got in the lift.
Which year was that?
Oh, I don't know. Tim Sherwood was in charge when he
seven years ago, maybe?
Yes. So, got up in the lift, and there was a health club on the top floor. So, lift stops at the second floor. Fella gets in just a towel. Shaving-edged fella. Starts smiling. It makes me feel very unnerving, you know.
Yeah. Was he like really fit or anything?
I'm a married man, but yeah, he looked quite decent, you know. And we'll be explained. So, anyway, head to the before the game. Goes down, lift stops, he gets in, smiles and starts sort of conversation again. I'm thinking,
is he fully dressed at this point?
He's fully dressed now. Okay. But even then, it's still a bit unnerving, as you know what British people are like. We don't talk to each other on the tubes, let alone stuck in the lift with someone.
Then the lift
door opens and the flash guns galore, and it was Zinedine Zidane. Even though it was.
You didn't recognise Zizou? Are you serious?
To be fair, all I was thinking was, please keep that towel up.
Wow.
Yeah, incredible.
That's incredible.
On Twitter somewhere, there's all the British press back with him.
How did you not realise that was Zizou?
I don't know.
Did you?
It's enough covering
you
Tottenham.
You were looking at the ground,
without worrying about what's in the end.
What was he doing at Benfica Tottenham?
I don't know if he was at Real Madrid then or not. I don't know if he was.
He would have been before then.
And so obviously, he wasn't on my football stream of consciousness. So I didn't expect to see him at Benfica Tottenham.
That's my excuse.
I stayed with my family at in Worsley in Manchester for Real Madrid Man United, so it must have been a half term. So my son and wife and daughter were with me, and I'd gone off to cover the game, or they'd been around during the day, I'd been out and about or whatever. And when I came back, my missus said something like, Scott was in the lobby. It was nice people talking to him and the news came on and there was this bloke playing really well in midfield, and she goes, that was the bloke Scott was talking to. I went, oh, Zinedine Zidane. I said, Scott, what do you say to you? He said, do you like football? He asked me if I like football. I said, what do you say? No. That was it.
See, wow. Otherwise, when Zidane made a pass on me, I'd be with a football, not in a towel.
Bizarrely, I had to have a dribbling football race with Zidane. It was on the pitch at Anderlecht, and it was ahead of Euro 2000, and there's two or three journalists. It was utterly bizarre. It was done through Adidas, and we had to do a dribbling race against Zidane. He's obviously laughing at the fact that...
How can anyone have to do this challenge?
He'd obviously completed his task a lot quicker than mine, and then we had to... it was Del Piero telling us how to take free kicks, and then how we had to score past Edwin van der Sar. And I think it was Zidane doing the crossing, and I actually slipped, and as a result did this amazing header past van der Sar, which obviously a total fluke.
I would take that because
I slipped, and that was...
One man slips, another man's diving header, Charlie. Come on.
Yeah.
indeed.
Absolutely. But I think the Champions League trips now... They're very different to international tournaments, we said earlier, because they are quite short.
Very regimented, aren't they?
Very regimented.
As well.
Journalists, as Sean said, tend not to go travel with the teams anymore. Arsenal were one of the last ones too. And Wenger had got it in his head that it was the journalists delaying the team after the final whistle. And there's been stories of, I've had colleagues literally with their computer trying to finish their rewrite, their match report, getting on the
Praise, it's running along the runway.
Absolute nightmare.
I can see you've all been there.
And it was very much the walk of shame, as Sean said, all the players.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you'd be hurried and you'd get to the airport, and then there's Emmanuel Adebayor still buying perfume in duty free or something. But in the end, I think Wenger realised that it wasn't actually the journalists delaying takeoff, it was actually the kit. So in the end, from then on, journalists never went on any more Arsenal trips. So it was actually, it was always the kit, getting the kit on the planes, which delayed everyone rather than the journalists. As a result, we don't really see them so much. They're sort of 36-hour trips.
So now you spend all your time sitting in the back of a Ryanair or an EasyJet, hoping that the fans don't recognise you or give you abuse.
Yeah, that's one, isn't it? One, you just kind of want to hide, don't you? Who are the best managers on these pre-season tours?
If you commit to going on the pre-season tour, there's usually a sort of fait accompli that we will get the star player and a manager who will do a sit-down with you for daily papers and possibly the Sunday papers if you send, if you'll say we're going to cover it. It is the time of when you properly do get to know a manager. They will they're not doing a lot. They're prepared to spend an hour or so. Magnificent one with Mourinho, I remember. And you get them in a much more relaxed, because they're not in a hurry. They haven't got to get out to training. And they will sit around and even off the record chat to you as well. It's probably the best chat you will get with manager or player your entire
season.
Such
an insight. And that can set you up to look going into the season as well.
What's the best chat? Who's got the best chat?
The best one I had was Andre Villas-Boas. I don't remember when Liverpool played. He was at Tottenham then. And Pat Sheehan, who was then our Tottenham correspondent, then went over to be our boxing correspondent. So I filled in for him on the tour. And part of the gate was, it was somewhere like Seattle, I think. And then they played Liverpool in Baltimore. And that was a game, I don't remember it, when Charlie Adam went through Gareth Bale. So I was the only London journalist there, because all the other journalists in Baltimore were from the Northwest, so they were from the Liverpool patch. And I'd only, well, not even met Andre Villas-Boas and Simon Feldstein, the Tottenham press chief, come round the corner and said, oh, the gaffer wants a word.
Oh, he wants a word.
So took me into the dressing room and said, look what you've done. And Bale had been taken off on a stretcher. And he went, right, I want you to make Adam look like so-and-so. Listen to what Gareth's got to say. Oh. Sorry, I've never great accent, as you can tell.
Yeah, you're very good at these.
I don't know, I'm
this could be a whole other career for you.
Absolutely. He then, Gareth said, he'd spoken to someone before the game in the Liverpool squad, who probably would have been Bellamy or someone, you know, giving any Welsh links, who said that Adam was going to do him on the pitch. They had a set to at Anfield the same season a couple of times, and I think Adam had also either been booked or sent off for a challenge the previous season on him. Maybe, but he stood me at the door of the dressing room and he said, no one's allowed to leave until he's spoken to who he wants to speak to. So I then spoke to Gareth Bale, I then spoke to a couple of other players who said they'd heard the same thing. It was great copy and sort of unprecedented.
Yeah,
they've still put Bale in a wheelchair taking him out. And then the following evening,
did he need a wheelchair?
This is where it gets. Two days later, we went to New York where they played the New York Red Bulls, and they went to a do in Manhattan, a business complex, and one of the skyscrapers, and turned up, and Gareth Bale said, sort of quite sheepishly, I need to have a word, because we said it could be out for the start of the season. I said, you're playing tomorrow, aren't you? He said, yes. I said, I thought you might be. I said, but he said, but the boss didn't want to, you know, didn't want to take the edge off the story. So he knew how to play the game, AVB. You know, the media game, if not always the football game.
Yeah.
We used to go on, when Rafa Benitez was Chelsea manager, Rafa had a way, often would fly back straight after, had a horrible habit of landing at Gatwick at 2:45 in the morning. And at about 1:30, Rafa would invariably say, here, come down the back of the plane. And he would have an off-the-record conversation for about 45 minutes. Obviously, all geared his particular way.
Yes.
Tell you all sorts. And he would go into a few Liverpool stories about, the truth about me and Gerrard and all of this sort of stuff. I know he always felt a bit miffed that Gerrard didn't think
he believed in him properly or
whatever. And you get long. And after he'd done this about three times, when it came to the third time, I go, oh, no.
Here he comes.
Rafa again.
I want to sleep.
45 minutes for Rafa at the back of the plane. And finally, my one with Bobby Robson, which started off badly but ended all right. So I'd written something in the paper about that there were so many cliques at Newcastle United that they needed four different dressing rooms to accommodate the players. And this was only halfway in the middle of some sort of match report. Well, he went off the dial with the local press saying this was an outrage and all of that. And that is that reporter brave enough to come up? Because I was working out of London to come up, see him, and talk about it.
Oh, he was, wasn't he? He was.
So I said, so I couldn't not go. Newcastle's my team's my hometown, so I had to go there. And it was a day he was holding a press conference for the preview of the match, but he wanted to see me afterwards. And clearly, the local journos have been tipped off. One of them was my friend who was Jeff Brown, who worked for the local TV station, actually interviewed Bobby about this scandalous stuff. I said, thanks, Jeff, you're my mate. He said, oh, it's just great TV, Sean. It's going to be really, really good. David Craig of Sky comes out. He goes, he's absolutely slaughtered you. Craig got off to do that on the TV. So I go in to see Bobby Robson. He says, huh, what's this about then, son? I go, well, you know, four different dressing rooms. They tell me you're a Newcastle fan. You're not, are you? I goes, I am. I really am a Newcastle fan. But this is the information I had. This is how I feel about it. This. What do you know? Give me your football credentials. So I what do you know about it? Not necessarily how good a player you are.
That could
be another conversation.
So I start explaining about how I've worked on the Newcastle Chronicle, the Journal, I know. And then I say this thing about, and, you know, I like my non-league football. Non-league football? Go on, tell me about non-league football then. I can match you for non-league football. I said, well, my wife's cousin, Alan Driver, played for North Shields, and I think the FA Vars final in 96. Alan Driver? I know Alan Driver, he says.
Yeah, he's rattled, was he? Yeah.
He says, because obviously he came from there, and he knew all the non-league football. He proceeds to go to, you go to Spartans. Did you go and see Blythe Spartans in the FA Cup? yeah, I did. What a run that was, he says. Yeah. He says, you like them, did you? Uh-huh. What about the other clubs? What about anybody else? Do you used to go watch Darlington and Hartlepool as well? Did you? Yeah, I used to go and put a lot. Brilliant. And we proceeded to have three quarters now conversation.
This is insane.
All sorts of North East football. And at the end he goes, I didn't agree with you, son, but you're all right. Sent me out. Fantastic.
Wow. Oh, nice one.
Well, if Bobby Robson thinks you're all right.
Well, in the end, I don't think he thought I was all right.
I'll take that any day of the week.
That didn't mean that the programmes that went out later still weren't him slaughtering me on the local
when Bobby Robson was manager of Ipswich, for these European trips, rather than a normal two-nighter, it's normally, you know, team goes out the day before the game, obviously, and comes back either after the match or the day after. Bobby Robson, along with the kobolds that used to run Ipswich, agreed that they should be three-day trips. So you go out 2 days before the game. So when Ipswich got back into Europe in 2001, they finished fifth in the Premier League. George Burley, they decided to keep that to 3 days. So I was covering Ipswich. It was a nightmare for the offices because we were going Tuesday morning ahead of a Thursday night UEFA Cup match.
What'd you do?
And we come back on a Friday, and they beat Torpedo Moscow Ipswich. In their second game, they played Helsingborg of Sweden. We went out on the Tuesday, and it was mixed seating at Ipswich then, so journalists weren't sat together, and there was one time I think I was sat between George Burley and Matt Holland, the captain, you know, slightly odd, and the Ipswich doctor insisted they wanted to still go to Sweden 2 days early because of the potential of jet lag. And the night before the game, we were in a bar, and it was about midnight, and George Burley comes in into this bar and instantly looks at us and says, look, I've only come in because it's a bit cold outside, chaps, isn't it? We then pointed out the Ipswich Team Hotel was across the road from the bar. But yeah, the officers used to absolutely hate. We used to call them sort of sheep shanks holidays, you know, to actually, and then they ended up getting in through to Inter Milan, and Ipswich got relegated. And then they got back into Europe on the Fair Play League. So even though they're in Championship, we then got another whole run of going to Belgrade and Liberec, and you know, unfortunately, they've not been seen since. But yeah, it was very much a Burley carrying on the Bobby Robson's proud tradition of trips.
And that's why tours and when you go away with clubs are so valuable, because just like players when they go on international duty and they always say something to their home media and they come back and they go, oh, we were
misquoted, the translation
was wrong. It seems like when you get a manager out of, or players out of their usual environment, you can get a little bit more from them. They're more relaxed, their tongues are a little bit looser.
Do you then get the press officers, as you just mentioned there, coming in saying, oh, they didn't mean that? I mean, who were the trickiest press officers to deal with? This is It depends if you want to talk past or present.
I'm saying Mr. Felstein at Tottenham is fantastic. Best press officer in the league.
Difficult.
And I was okay in LA last year when executive Donna Cullen turned around in front of an audience and said, the Sun, they've not covered themselves in glory by saying our new stadium won't be open in time. You wait and see. So I've not made
who had the last laugh there.
You know, I've not made anything of that. I think, you know, without sort of blind smoke out his backside because he gets that done enough. Simon's done a good job there.
Yeah, but we don't want to do that with Simon.
I think a lot of clubs now, I think they've really improved on the media.
Yeah, you've
front.
Got to remember as well, at one time, certainly when I started out, there weren't press officers, there weren't any heads of communication. Yeah. You rang a football club and said, can I speak to the manager, please?
Or just rang the training ground.
Or rang the training ground and a player would pick it up. All right, George, it's the son on the line for you. There you go.
Or you'd go down to the training ground and off the off chance, you could, someone could still walk in and you'd catch him coming out.
Yeah.
You used to go down to West Ham's training ground, you just walk in, Harry Redknapp would say, a cup of tea, and or sometimes make it himself. The players would be going past.
It was Harry Redknapp doing a press conference. Came in what player it was. And was it one of our colleagues asked Harry Redknapp, are you interested in signing this player? Was it one of the Romanians?
Oh, yeah, it was.
And he actually denied that West Ham were... One of those.
Oh, no. Right, okay.
It was, he denied that they were interested in signing him. And as he said, not interested, that player walked past the window out to training.
Oh, that one!
Fantastic!
I can't remember the name now. Middlesbrough was the one that always used to make me laugh in the Brian Robson era. They had about 8 different press officers and could come back with no comment in so many different ways. It was unbelievable. They realise now that coming back with that all the time is just doesn't help their club either. And the ones who know that actually it's good for your club to get publicity, it's good for them to be in the papers, maybe it won't always be what you want it to be. Better to be talked about than not talked about.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
What's it like with the big superstars then? Because we talked about, in the other edition, we talked about, you know, England on tour and then you've got David Beckham. What's it like when you've got a superstar in a team like Beckham, like Ronaldo, someone glittery and foreign who's come over? Does it change your relationship with the club?
Still an element of some Premier League clubs haven't quite got the notion of the mix zone right yet, have they? And they still don't think, you know, that mere journalists should be able to breathe the air, the same air as these superstar footballers.
Star players.
I remember a couple of years, this is a long time ago, in Arsenal's training ground, before they had this separate area for the academy, and the media and the press conferences were literally just in the entrance, up the stairs, very near the canteen. And one of my colleagues, Andy Dillon, was having a chat to someone and was just staring out into the canteen while having a chat, and the security came up and told him off for watching Patrick Vieira eating.
What a crime.
And then literally the next week was the first time all the blinds were put up. So the journalists couldn't watch any of the players eat.
Because we all love to watch players eating, you see. That's how, you know, the way you go training and the way you do your studying.
That's the perk of the job, isn't it? Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. Eat,
but I think the club's problem, in terms of when you've got a superstar or a big player now, I think actually clubs have got an issue getting much access in a funny sort of way. It's not just the journalists talking to these players. In terms of getting these players speaking on the various media channels, be it on the website or on their own TV, that they have a real hell of a task now to get the players, and the managers don't often care to say you have to do the club stuff. I mean, again, going back, but Fulham had Dimitar Berbatov, and it took them months or half a season just to get him to do an interview for the programme, let alone to do an interview with any of the national papers. I remember they tagged it exclusive on the front of the programme, thinking, God, if a club can't get some time with one of their own players, we haven't got a chance in hell.
Certainly some of the English ones I can think of who thought it was their duty, if they're the captain, to come out afterwards. Gerrard's somebody who springs to mind, who would always do it. I mean, didn't go hiding. Terry, certainly the earlier days, would certainly put himself up. He felt it's my responsibility. If we've had a bad game, I'm the one who has to talk. Didn't go missing.
Anyone can come out when they've won 3 or 4-0, but when they've lost 3-2 to a club at the bottom of the table, yeah. I think that's when you see the measure of a player.
Arsenal have had some bad ones, you know, because Thierry Henry was very good recent years. I don't think Van Persie was a very good captain. He was only captain for 1 year. Fabregas wasn't very good. And Laurent Koscielny has been an utter disgrace. Obviously, he's left there now, but he's been captain for some time. And, you know, in all the times, you know, we've covered Arsenal, barely ever heard him speak. And there's a few years ago, 2.5 years ago, Arsenal got thrashed at Bayern Munich. It was actually, I think it was Theo Walcott, who was always very good with the press. Walcott said, look, this one's for the captain, chaps. We've just lost. We've been thrashed. So Koscielny comes through, head down, and wouldn't speak. And I don't think in all his time at Arsenal, I've barely ever heard him speak. And I think for a captain of such a big, important club, not able to actually, you know, speak to the fans, I think it shows you that maybe the media department of that club over time may be working in a different way to somewhere like Tottenham, where you actually do hear the players speak.
Charlie referred to Henry being very good at this, but after Arsenal lost the European Cup final, there was a lot of speculation about it might be leaving and stuff like that. I do remember him getting on the microphone of that plane on the way back, talking to all the press and all that, saying how much he appreciated all their support, how much they hoped it had been a great season. Pretty classy. And when we've had him as a columnist as well, when he was a player and latterly as a pundit, he actually would love to ring you up and talk for ages and ages about the game. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Not always did he want it in his column, I have to say, sadly.
He wanted to be the best he could be at everything.
Which is impressive.
Not Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
He had an incredible football knowledge. And even once, I remember joking, we used to meet for, you know, do the interviews at a hotel. And I remember once joking that he didn't know a team in the championship, and he like literally listed 8 or 9 of the players, and you know, incredible mind. He wasn't so great at laughing at himself, Thierry. I remember one occasion he was the face of EA Sports FIFA, and I did an interview with him to basically, you know, plug EA Sports FIFA, and that, you know, he had to do it with us because we had a contract with the Sun, and he looked at the game and he wanted to play Arsenal. So I'm a Norwich fan, so I had this bizarre thing in his hotel room, and he's Arsenal and I'm Norwich, and he kept passing to himself just to look a bit closer. And
did you whack him while you're diving in the lounge?
I was whacking him all the time. I remember my defenders were Craig Fleming and Malcolm Mackay. He was getting more and more annoyed with me the more I was fouling him. And one of our former photographers then said he was getting really annoyed by now, Thierry. It was 0-0. And our photographer goes, you must love this game, Thierry. He went, why? He goes, well, at least you can head the ball now. At which point, Thierry put the controls down and had a face-to-face photographer. Didn't quite see the funny side.
Interesting.
That was brilliant.
That's hilarious. Do you get, like, did you notice, was there a notable difference between a big, big sort of top four club and a club lower down the league? Or is it?
Oh, absolutely, difference, yeah. Especially
in terms of the way that
they're chucking players at you. And they're really decent to handle. I'll take the example. I'm going to take Watford last season when a lot of the racist stuff was going on. And we asked, I think, on the Wednesday morning if we could speak to Christian Cabalet. And by Wednesday afternoon, we was over the training ground doing the interview.
Have you ever had moments where your conversations have been completely lost in translation with a particular player?
Oh, frequently.
Is that in English?
It's accents.
It's not so much horribly wrong, but I remember us doing one, me and Matt Dickinson doing one with Gennaro Gattuso, who couldn't speak any English, really. It's before he's gone to Glasgow Rangers. And he had a hat on which said, Reno is now. And there was an interpreter there, and he was in a bad mood. And any time we asked a question, he just kept pointing to his hat. Reno is, and he said, Reno is now. I mean, whatever question we asked, so, you know, do you think you can beat England at X? Reno is now. Reno is now. Just went on for about 10 minutes, and I'm thinking, what is this? What are you doing? And then he just up and walked out. I thought that was possibly the most pointless one-to-one I've ever had with a player in my life.
But that, you bring up an interesting point, because obviously when we travel abroad with clubs, you'll get an interpreter there translating the questions. And we went and done... Particularly has to be Tottenham when Slaven Bilic was in charge, and he sat on. We went and done his press conference because we'd been out for lunch with him earlier in the day. So we went along to his press conference, which was an hour before the Tottenham one later that evening. A couple of questions were asked. The translator started translating. Slaven Bilic stood up and went, "That's not what I said at all." Because Slaven speaks about five languages.
Yeah, exactly.
Turns out this poor fella had just been dragged in from next door to the tour and didn't know what he was saying. He was just saying what he thought. So he was giving his answer to
the Mourinho was very good at that. Mourinho didn't just know languages, he understood nuance and everything. So even if it was translated exactly word for word, Mourinho would point out that he meant it to mean like that, even though the words were correct. I mean, he was just astonishing. The way you sit there and he goes from Catalan to Spanish to English to astonishing stuff. And why they bothered having translators there, goodness only knows, because they really... Mourinho, at times, used to look at the translator like it was absolutely stupid.
Roy Hodgson was very good as well, wasn't he, over the years? Obviously, you know, with his languages as well, certainly quite rare for an Englishman to be so adept at press conferences. Yeah, probably quite a rare breed there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A little quick fire round. Best team to cover, Jigo?
Well, I'm going to say Tottenham.
Okay. Charlie?
Well, for speaking to players afterwards, Tottenham, at the moment, Tottenham are right up there, yeah.
Sure.
Best team to cover over the years, for me, has been Manchester United. If you don't do them on a regular basis. I think if you do them on a regular basis, it probably gets you down, but I used to do a lot of them in Europe, and just interest-wise, just from a journalistic point of view, I enjoyed it because there was always, always stories out of Manchester United. They could draw 0-0 in a boring game, you win 3-0, lose 3-0. It was always box office, and that, to me, as a football reporter, is what you want.
Would you say they're still the biggest club?
Yeah, like, definitely.
Yeah, I'd
in
say,
terms of interest.
Yeah.
Them and Liverpool, aren't they, internationally?
100%. I mean, and you know, a lot of the Liverpool players are very good at talking afterwards at the moment. Arsenal, again, going back to them, opposite to Tottenham, they're not very good and you know, they're very difficult to speak to afterwards. And at the Emirates, they've worked out how to avoid going into the mix zone, the interview area. But even last season at Brighton, I was waiting to speak to them and none of the Arsenal players walked past. And the lady who's in charge of the mix zone
at
the Emirates...
That's just not right, is it?
She then admitted that Arsenal, the first club since Brighton moved into the Amex, to worked out the secret route. So, you know, she said that A, they're not allowed to go this way. B, they've worked out the fire exit. And C, someone's done a recce to find that out, haven't they? They've not.
I mean,
just,
they've really thought about
this. Aubameyang's not suddenly taking the wrong turn.
Finding their way to go, eh?
And on that note, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure once again. That is it for this edition of Swedes 2 Turnips 1. I'm Reshmin Chowdhury. Thank you once again, Sean, Charlie and Paul. We look forward to having you on the pod again. Hope that you all enjoyed it as well. If you did, please go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast or your favourite podcast app and hit that subscribe button. And if you like the show, please rate and review as well. We'll see you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.